I'm Tracy.
And I'm Sharon. And we are Feet of Clay.
Confessions of the Cult Sisters. And welcome to our second season.
Yeah, saying season two, it's kind of a mind blower for me. And yeah, all this started thanks to your creative determination, Miss Tracy.
Oh, but we can't forget about our launch party, courtesy of Troy and Brian from I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist podcast.
Yeah, right. Well, no, we will never, never, never forget Troy and Brian.
They're our little brothers. We call them our little brothers.
They are our little bros. Okay. So last year, we figured out that in less than 9 months, we recorded over 30 episodes. And we also realized that that once a week pace was just a little too sizzling for us old ladies to sustain in the long term.
Yeah, so we are even starting off this season by doing our every other week plan.
That's right. And our kickoff, this season two, episode one, it's actually based on something that you sent me back in November. And the truth is, Tracy, I mean, we were both like, I mean, just chomping at the bit, really wanting to discuss it then and there. But there just was not enough time to be able to do a good job of it.
Yeah. And we did a good job. We tried not to talk about it so it would be fresh for this podcast.
Yeah.
And at that point, we were bumping up against the holidays. And So we agreed to prioritize this immediately for season two.
Yeah. Okay. Tracy, I got to be upfront with you and, of course, our listeners. I have got lots and lots and lots of emotions and thoughts about our topic today. And what is it? The kids or somebody says like really big feels. Is that what they say these days?
I think it's all the feels.
All the feels. Okay, man, I got all the feels and then some.
Yeah. So back in November, I sent Sharon a link to what was then a brand new interview. I think it was actually posted on October 31st with Melody Green that had just been released.
Ooh, it was a Halloween thing.
It was a Halloween thing.
Spooky.
I found it kind of the early part of November, but it was released on October 31st on another podcast. And Sharon, do you know how I stumbled across it?
No. How did you find it?
Well, we will often say that our name, Feet of Clay, Confessions of the Cult Sisters, is a very long name.
So long.
Yeah. So if you're ever trying to search that, you have a lot of words to type out. So I found a quick hack. You guys can all use this, that if you want to go in like to the podcast platforms and kind of find us really quickly, you just search in Keith Green.
Oh.
Much shorter. And our podcast is usually one of the first ones to come up. So I did that one afternoon. I typed in Keith Green and there was a podcast that showed up that was one I had not seen before. And it was an interview featuring Melody Green.
And of course, we are going to put the link to that in our show notes for any of you who want to go in and listen to it personally.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, I was surprised because we kind of haven't heard from her, you know, in recent social or in the news or anything. And so immediately,
right,
I was very interested in what Melody was going to be sharing in October of 2023.
Yep.
And so, of course, I immediately listened. A lot of times I'm doing that while I'm driving to and from work. And then I sent it to Sharon.
Yes, you did. And of course, I listened to it right away as well. And I guess as one would expect, of course, that interview included a super positive pitch for Keith's music and Last Days Ministries literature and Melody's book. And of course, since you and I, Tracy, we believe that all of those things can actually cause great harm. Yeah. Yeah, that's also part of why we wanted to do this episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so just going back to this, as I said, Tracy, I recognize that my emotions about this have ranged from one end of the spectrum to another. And listening to Melody in that interview, I felt all kinds of things. I felt empathy. I felt frustration, pity, anger, sorrow, compassion, vexation, longing. Mm. I mean, just was like, okay, yeah, all the feels. I had all
the feels.
So two things, you're going to have to probably help me regulate a little bit while we do this. If you hear me getting too intense, say something to me, sister. Talk me off the ledge.
Well, definitely the same here. But of course, I want to recognize that you had a much closer relationship with Melody than I did. Mm-hmm. So I totally get that and understand that you have maybe even more feels than I do. Mm. But listening, I actually found myself having a lot more compassion for her. Mm. I guess one of the main reasons is I can't imagine, I know I often say 30 years and then you tell me it's 40 years because it's been such a long time. I can't imagine still holding on so strongly to those beliefs that I held as a teenager at this phase in my life.
Right.
And so it's kind of staggering to me.
It is. Yeah, it is staggering. And you know, as I sit here right now, okay, recording right now, like, how do I even feel about recording this? I mean,
yeah,
we're gonna talk about the stuff she said, and we're gonna talk about things in her life, and I'm feeling, I feel conflicted. Mm. I feel like I could sit right across the table from her and talk to her, like just sitting here, like, hey, Mel, come on.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great if she would come on and we could sit across the table from her?
It would. And I'd really just love to talk with her privately, but that's just she's just not been open or willing for that at all. And well, anyway, hearing her voice again, it made me think back on my relationship with her, which started in the late 1970s. And lasted until I was kicked out of Last Days Ministries. That was in the beginning of 1987. Mm. And I know we've said some of this before, right? So I kind of hate repeating it, but there are newer listeners, and this can help maybe put the level of our relationship into context. So in the years before Keith was killed, I and my then husband, who was one of the elders, quote elders at Last Days, we spent significant time with Keith and Melody. I mean, we had dinners together. We went to the movies. We hung out for game nights. We, you know, hang out at their house. And yeah, that was just ongoing time we spent together. We even took a European vacation together, not to mention, you know, all the daily interactions with producing and printing and shipping out the literature and the albums and the teaching tapes, you know, which went out to hundreds of thousands of people. Well, wait, so like the operations side of that was mostly with Keith, that was mostly with him. But as far as us as couples, you know, we were in their will to raise their kids if she and Keith died. And then in the years after the plane crash, Melody and I, we worked together on the content for the Last Days magazine. And we even co-wrote articles together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even just on a really personal side, in 1985, Mel was there with me during the labor and delivery of my first child.
I know. We have those pictures and we can post some of those because that definitely is a much closer relationship than a lot of us at Last Days had with Melody.
Yeah. I mean, we were way more than just mere casual acquaintances. Mm-hmm. And I think about so much that has happened, right, in the decades since then. The wisdom I've gained, the ups and downs, the pains, the traumas, the triumphs, the insights that, you know, is part of the course of life. And when I think about that, and then I look back on our time together at Last Days, I'm not really sure it was a two-way friendship or a mutual relationship. Mm. And there's probably a variety of reasons for that. One thing is, Melody always did seem like a little closed off to everyone. And, you know, okay, let's also be fair. I mean, she's 15 years older than me.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So at the time, you know, I'm in my 20s, she's in her 30s. So she probably didn't really view me as her peer. And I can, I can understand that. But I think also another really big part was because the Last Days Ministries belief system and this whole like fishbowl of commune life, it did not foster any real authenticity of the individual self for any of us, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And if you can't know and embrace yourself for who you truly are, you certainly can't create close connections with others.
Wow. Yeah, there's so much to that. And I know we'll unpack even a little bit more as we go on. Spoiler alert for those who plan to listen to Melody in that interview. One of the things that really jumped out at me, and it goes along with a lot of kind of the intro you just gave, is I can still hear a lot of that pain in her.
Mm.
And we'll get into more of the reasons of why that is. But Sharon, in all that, I know you've reached out to her in years past. I know at the beginning of when all this stuff was going down at LDM, and then more recently, I think just a few months ago, I'm not quite sure how many weeks. Have you had any response at all from her in that?
No, nothing, nothing at all. You know, to be specific on the recent side of things, last October, I messaged her again, both by email to the main LDM website, you know, the official contact thing, and then personally on Facebook. I did get a response from the Last Days administration person, whoever that is.
Which we don't know who that is, right?
No. I think the person and the name Joy sticks in my mind, but I don't remember for sure. And part of it was I had requested that they discontinue the two remaining articles that I could remember that had been written by me. And then there was a bunch of follow-ups back and forth for a couple weeks. I was finally able to confirm that they did, in fact, remove those from the website.
Hmm.
So guess what, Tracy? Like, I didn't even tell you this. So, you know, like a week and a half ago or whatever, as we were starting to prep for this episode, I went on to the site just to be sure that those articles were, in fact, gone. And when I was doing that, I discovered another article by me that I had totally forgotten about. You know, so a week and a half ago, I emailed again asking for that also to be removed. As of this morning, when we're recording, that last one, that kind of hidden one, it is still available. So like if you go on there and you search my name, which back then was Sharon Bennett, it pops up. Mm. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so that was like the business side of that correspondence. But on the personal side, no, I haven't had any response from Melody.
Mm.
Not from all those years ago, and still not in these past several months. And I mean, Tracy, it's been over 35 years.
Yeah.
That is a long time to be stuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fucking long time to be living in such fear of speaking to someone who you once trusted enough to raise your children. I mean, that's a lot of fear, isn't it?
It's or something, right?
Or something. Yeah.
You and I have definitely talked about that as far as reaching out to her. And I know, I had a couple of immediate thoughts when I saw that new interview. I think honestly, my first one is, maybe she knows we're out there and she's trying to come out and set her own record straight, right? So I didn't know if she would have any references to us.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she didn't
make
any reference to us, but
and let me just say, I'm pretty sure she's aware our podcast exists, but I seriously doubt she's ever listened to any of the episodes. Is my guess?
Yeah, I mean, if you reached out to her, you told her, right?
I did. Yeah, I told her. Hey, we're doing this podcast,
and we do know that. Well, we did make a splash on the LDM alumni page, which we've mentioned in a couple of past episodes.
We got kicked out.
Which she's still a member of.
We got kicked out again.
And we know of people kind of closer in her circles that know that we're out here. And for me, I was especially hoping that somebody would let her know that we did an interview with Dawn Green.
Right. Right.
And I was hoping that if she listened to anything, she would at least listen to that episode.
Yeah. Yeah. But okay. So for those who are not familiar, Dawn was the foster daughter of Keith and Melody. She lived with them starting in California when she was about 10 years old. And then, of course, lived in their home as their daughter onward through adulthood. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to point out again, Dawn is the only living person who experienced Keith Green as a parent.
Mm, yeah, you always make that point. That is something really to think about. And of course, those are episodes 15 and 16 from our season one, and we will link those in our show notes.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we release those episodes, I couldn't imagine not being curious, right? If mm-hmm. I were her, I would have been so curious to at least click in and see what are these people saying. I wouldn't have been able to stay away from that. So.
Me either. But I don't know. Do you remember Dana Carvey when he would do his impersonation of George Bush Sr. and it was like nagada, nagada. Remember that?
So,
not gonna happen. Not gonna do it.
Not gonna happen. So, Dana Carvey, you're dating us, first of all, because I think that is way OG Saturday Night Live, right?
Right, right. Oh, and the church lady. I totally forgot it. Oh. Isn't that special?
I have seen clips. I have seen clips of the church lady, but I was not watching Saturday Night Live, Sharon, because that was really worldly and we didn't have a TV for a while. So that's just always able to be called out by you. Means you probably were sneaking some worldly stuff again.
Yeah, sneaking. That's me, sneaking.
You're sneaking. Oh, we need to do like our own parody of kind of two fundies and one person who's always sneaking. And of course, that would be you.
Of course, that would be me. Yes.
Of course, that would be. Well, you know, one of our former cult sisters who was with us at LDM, we had a good long conversation not too long ago, and she mentioned that she was still very hopeful that Melody would begin to start seeing some of the more toxic aspects of the, well, let me say, your new acronym that you created last season. Is it STOS? STOS.
Wait. What is that? What is that?
I had a really good image of this up on Instagram. The shit ton of shit.
Oh, okay, yeah. The shit ton of shit.
The bucket of toxic shit.
Okay.
And so there at least is some hope out there that maybe there's still time for her to start seeing some of this.
That would be amazing.
It would be. I mean, I think of another book review that we did on Shannon Harris. And when we read through that and just saw her honest outlook of everything that she stood for and kind of how she grew out of that, that was awesome. And I think, how powerful would that be if Melody, from her platform, could be able to write a book like that? And,
wow.
You know, especially now in this environment, at this recording, the IHOP Kansas City is still going through quite a scandal, of which Melody was a part of at one point.
I don't want to send us down too much of a rabbit trail, but in 50 words or less, what's your understanding of Melody's previous relationship with IHOP KC? I mean, I know she was in Kansas City for quite a number of years.
Yeah, in 50 words or less. And I think there are people who might know more than I, but I think as Last Days Ministries was really ending, I know my ex and I followed the prophets of Kansas City pretty closely at that time, of which Mike Bickle was the head and lead prophet. And she was really drawn to that. I think even the community that they were building at the time, there was going to be a similar school to the one like YWAM had, the one like Last Days Ministries had. And personally, I think it was the community aspect and the similarities that drew her, as well as the platform of being so connected to kind of the leading edge of the people, you know, in,
got it,
you know, kind of the prophetic ministry at that time. That's my perspective.
Okay. Okay, cool. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
But back to what you were saying, though, about how amazing, you know, would it be if Melody put out a really honest book or a really honest interview? Wow, that would just be so powerful, you know? I mean, thinking of if she even just started down that path of honesty and self-reflection, but I think she's still far, far away from anything like that. And I base it not only on this recent interview, but also her public remarks from the stage in July of 2022, which was the anniversary of the crash. I mean, this super pro YWAM, telling people to go get training, go on to missions. I mean, it's clear there is still this just closed tunnel vision, this immature circular logic going on.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to remind listeners who may not have heard back when I said that in the past, that it really was that public celebration of the 40th anniversary of the plane crash held at the Tyler Base of Youth with a Mission, which was down the road from Last Days Ministries, that really got me spurred to get this podcast started. After all these years, I mean, after all the broken marriages and the circles that we've traveled in, after all the things that you started saying at the beginning, growing older and wiser and raising kids and just learning about love and life, us going through divorce, she went through a divorce. I was not just surprised, I was stunned that they went so hard on the more toxic part of Last Days Ministries. And Kathleen Dillard, who went so hard on the more toxic parts of Keith Green's personality.
Oh, yeah. Ugh,
the veneration that was in what they shared, and not even understanding the exploitation, the control, the harm. I honestly was not expecting that. There's a great Instagram account that talks about all these songs that go hard and shouldn't. Yeah, it's hilarious because we often all did go hard on stuff we shouldn't. And I thought this was one of those. They went hard on that and they should not have.
Oh, I know. I mean, I could barely sit still watching it. I'm just like going, holy shit, you're kidding me. Oh my God, I can't believe they're saying these things. So it was like they are totally stuck in a time warp. And I'm not talking about the wonderful Rocky Horror version.
Let's do the time warp again.
Oh, yeah, baby. Hey, Tracy. So I think let's give listeners, because I made a couple quick notes. So let's give listeners just a little flavor of that crash anniversary message that was in the summer of 2022, your inspiration for this. And to me, it was just dripping with spiritual elitism and this, like, just shitting out shame on everyone else. Okay, like, so here's an example. Melody said something to the effect of, why am I following Jesus? I tried everything else. And she said, I know Satan is real. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I mean, what? I mean, it's the perfect combination of ignorance and arrogance. I tried everything. No, you didn't. No person on earth can fucking try everything. It just didn't happen. And I know Satan is real. I mean, I'm watching this grown woman and I'm thinking, you believe in leprechauns too? I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and it's really even born out of that then. I know when Kathleen went on and talked about how just basically Keith Green didn't honor any boundaries and just pushed as a way of evidence of being really sold out to Jesus and the fruit of the Spirit. And that was like, oh my God, I cannot abide by this, right? Where you are venerating someone who clearly has other issues going on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the thing I think that also really stood out to me is, and Melody went hard on pronouns. So in the middle of this Keith Green 40th anniversary, she starts calling out this younger generation. Like, they're trying to tell you that you should be using pronouns. And they're asking me what my pronouns are. And it's like, clearly I'm Melody Green. And it was just this kind of really angry rant in the middle of this speech.
And mocking. Yep. And mocking. There was mockery in her voice.
Mockery, which then circled around to the ultimate message of the night, which was no compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise. And it was no compromise on the stuff that's been so toxic and harmful. And I was like, I can't sit silent anymore and have this stuff be seen in this historical kind of rose-colored glasses of how awesome it all was.
I suppose we should probably put the link to it in our show notes as well for those who feel they want to try to stomach God knows how many hours of nausea, but anyway.
Yeah, you can put it on a higher speed and click through to other stuff. That's how I get through things.
Yeah, and I just one last thing on that. It did crack me up. Both Kathleen and Mel would like, they were almost kind of a little bit laughing. They've gone to these super secret places and they've done these super secret things for the kingdom of God, but they can't tell us because, you know, that's how important they are. And we clearly are not. And I was just like, wow, the blindness they have to their self-importance is just, it's laughable. It is laughable.
Yeah, it's laughable. And I think if people are listening and they're like, wow, that's really harsh. I mean, it is basically you see someone picking up like a hammer that was used so destructively on so many people's lives and still, you know, talking about how great it was. And that is, it's laughable, but it's also chilling.
Right.
Because it continues to happen in so many spaces. And so
it does.
That's why we're doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Tracy, before we go into discussing this latest interview, because, okay, that's just talking about the thing that got us kicked off that anniversary of the crash dog and pony show they did. But before we go into this latest interview that was just released in October of 23, I just want to do this. Hey, Mel, if for any reason you are listening to this, with all my heart, I want you to know that I do wish you well. I do. And I know that you have suffered losses beyond what I can possibly comprehend. And my heart breaks for you in that. It just really does. And I wish for you healing and connection and fullness of joy. And, you know, more than one thing can be true at the same time. Yeah, I mean, as Tracy and I are examining the past and the present, Mel, you hear us. We are calling out the specific things that we think were and are, continue to be destructive. I mean, destructive to countless others, but also destructive to yourself. And please remember, I mean, we hold ourselves just as accountable for having been a part of these beliefs and behaviors that are damaging, and they do not reflect a reality of love. I mean, with all my heart, I know with Tracy as well, we invite you to look more closely inside yourself, and please don't shy away from those tiny cracks, those little pinpricks of light that are trying to pierce the wall. I know they're there, Melody. I know they're there. And I know that's part of probably why you're afraid to talk with me. But I will be here for you. Tracy will be here for you. We will be here for you if ever you want to connect. So.
Because we get it. We've had to face these things inside of us. And, you know, it's not just our perspective on this past. There are so many. There are so many currently in the IHOP Kansas City folks. There are so many youth with a mission stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, more and more continue to come out that a simple Google search will actually bring you to some pretty eye-opening stories. And of course, we're going to have also some more to share on the whole youth with a mission stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we get it. And it is hard, especially when we've talked about facing our children and seeing the harm that we've done to them. So we know it's hard. Mm-hmm. But without further ado, Sharon, I think we should dive in then on what we got out of listening to this most current interview mm-hmm. that Melody did. Mm-hmm. So I have three main things that struck me as I was listening to this. Yeah.
I know. And when you told me that, I was thinking, wow, I have a lot more than three. So Tracy, I'm following your lead on organizing this discussion.
Yeah. And I mean, just listening to you open this up with the depth of relationship that you have, of course, you're going to have way more than three. And there is so much to unpack. But I did try to step back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talked about before that unpacking these topics can be like that spider web of so many interconnections that can get us all spun around. So I did try to organize it into three topics to make it easier for our listeners to follow along with us.
Right.
So number one, I was struck by how factually correct it was, because it has been 35 to 40 years. And, yeah, you know, we've gone on record in telling our stories and listening. It's like, you know what? She follows the exact timeline of events. I don't have any issues with the facts of how she laid them out. There were no big contradictions. But in that, I think what then also jumped out is how there was no self-reflection on that. It was right. Literally a regurgitating of the timeline of events, again, with those rose-colored glasses of, wasn't that amazing?
Yep. And not even a hint of understanding of how fucked up the structure was, the control, no, the manipulation, the harm.
No. And then the second thing that really jumped out was her own personal pain and trauma. And I mean, again, you mentioned it from the beginning. I think all of us have had boatloads of compassion. I can't imagine experiencing some of the losses that she's experienced. So we're not trying to take that away from her at all. But the amount of personal pain and trauma that still resonated through every one of her stories kind of broke my heart afresh a little. I mean, my other thought was, I don't know if she's ever really gotten into some serious secular grief counseling, some real, you know, stuff that we know sometimes Christian counseling just reinforces the same old story. Just pray harder, believe more. And it did break my heart that she seems to have such a gaping hole still.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's slightly possible that she did get some competent secular therapy, but if so, she doesn't even mention it in anything that I've heard of.
Yeah. Which then brings me to the third point that really struck out to me is there is so much apparent, and maybe it's because of everything that I've learned and grown in throughout the years, but when she talks, it's such apparent cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally dripping in her stories. And I don't think she's intending that, but it's just so eye-opening to me. So
it's the Christian doublespeak. I mean, it's just, yeah.
It is. And I guess when you're in it, you can't really see it.
Yeah.
But on one hand, she's doubling down on how Jesus is the only one who can get you through basically the stuff that she's had to go through. But then she goes on, and I think she talks pretty damningly of how that healing that supposedly was promised, it really didn't come to her the way that she is needed or expected. And that was palpable for me and heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's also obvious that she has built Keith up in her mind to be superhuman.
Yeah. Super Christian. Super Christian.
And in telling her stories that, I mean, to most of us who have gone through a healing journey are clear red flags. We're like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
She tells those without any hint of embarrassment or shame and actually defends some of those stories as marks of a godly man. And that was very telling to me.
Oh, you're so right. Oh, my God. All right. Well, yes, I'm going to try to fit my stuff under your three topics, but okay, so as we discuss these things, I do want to be very clear about something. I believe that Melody, like many of us, was both a victim and later a victimizer. And when you listen to her own words in the, you know, if you're reading the book, No Compromise, and if you're listening to this interview, you can hear clear evidence of the excessive control and emotional abuse that she experienced from Keith.
Yes.
And it is so sad to me that all of that behavior, all of that mindfuckery has been normalized and glorified in the name of being sold out for Jesus.
so glorified. And that was what was evident at the 40th anniversary. It's like, how can you guys want to perpetuate this? Oh, so Sharon, as we go through those two kind of overarching topics.
You mean three?
We have.
Three.
Oh, what did I say? Two?
You said two. Can you count, woman?
I'm taking a bucket away. I'm done. I'm taking the buckets away.
No, we're doing three. We're doing three of them.
We're doing three. We did make some notes of some things that Melody said in the interview. They aren't all word for word quotes.
Right.
And obviously, if you guys have read the books, if you followed, you know, her story from any point or angle, then you'll understand what we're saying.
So we're not going to say Melody said, quote, such and such, right? We just need to say something like Melody talked about, or Melody was telling this story, or that sort of thing, right? So, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. Good point. So your first bucket, Tracy, is that in the interview, Melody was generally factually correct in the things that she shared.
Yeah, so factually correct. She goes into the history of how, you know, she and Keith eventually got saved. And one of the things she talked about is that Keith was really into reading only the red letters in the Bible.
Right. Now, this is before they got saved, though, right? This is before they got saved.
And yeah. So I would say it was part of that journey, right? The journey of, you know, hey, they're searching. And Keith Green, and what was he? How old was he at the time? He was young.
Oh, my God. What was he? Like 19, right? I mean, he was a kid. And he was into that interpretation, you know, that fell in line with Godspell and the hippie culture of Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm-hmm. And Melody talked about how Keith viewed Jesus as a master, not the master. Actually, he had it right then. Then he went on to get all fucked up about it. And another thing Melody said in that was, Keith was following Jesus. I was following Keith. Now, that's a direct quote. I was following Keith. And I have a sense that in some ways, she was dragged along on so much of Keith's wild ride. And I'm not sure that all of this was really what she wanted.
You know, that was something that many of us felt even at last days. And I think that's one of those, you know, she said the quiet part out loud. I think that's actually very telling of what was going on inside of her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the aspects of that is one of the things that Keith Green is known for saying is all these other religions, you know, they point to Jesus. It's like Buddhists like Jesus, the, you know, Muslims like Jesus. So Jesus must be the good guy.
Not sure that's true.
Jesus must be the good guy.
I'm not sure that's true, but okay.
maybe it was more true back in the 70s when it was kind of all like where everyone's searching and Jesus is a good prophet. And recently, I mean, like last year, like mid-2023, there was this very weird clip that was making the rounds on social media, and it was titled, Man Uses Logical Thinking to Come to Jesus. And it doesn't, you know, quote him as being Keith Green, so I guess whoever pulled that clip wasn't quite aware of his reputation. And it shows this clip from when Keith Green was on the 700 Club years ago, basically saying the same thing. That's like, well, they pointed to Jesus and this religion pointed to Jesus, so Jesus must be the one. That's how he used logical thinking to come up with that.
It's just what it is absolute juvenile thinking, right? I mean, it's just, here we are laughing at the ridiculousness of it. And I'm sure you've seen it. There's this great meme out there and it shows this extension power cord thing, right? And so it plugs into the wall and then it's got multiple outlets on it. And the idea is you can plug a whole bunch of things into it, except instead of it being plugged into the wall, it's plugged into itself and it's perfect, right? Because it's the caption is, when someone says the Bible is true, because it says so in the Bible.
Yes. And, you know, I've been listening also a lot to some of the clips by Dan McClellan. We'll definitely put his links in our show notes. They're short little snippets that really go into some great historical misunderstandings and misinterpretations of the Bible as we all lived it, knew it, and many people know it today.
Yeah. And Bart Ehrman, he's got just incredible in-depth debunking as well. So we'll put a link in for him too. All right. Melody does talk about the early formation of the Last Days community and helping people. And, you know, that's the good part of Jesus's message, right? That's the thing that was good to do, like the Beatitudes and the Good Samaritan. That's kind of back to the red letter stuff. But, you know, it's interesting also how far that is from today's religious right.
Oh, so far.
And Melody's more aligned herself with that than with that original idea. But anyway, I'm jumping around too much.
Yeah, no, I think that that is really important because as she was talking about that, and you know, you can hear, and I think you, Sharon, and I have also been guilty of sometimes when we reference that time period, there is a fondness that comes out of what we're talking about. Because in that teenage heart that we had, we were wanting to make the world a better place. I think that is why so many people are drawn to Youth with a Mission and IHOP Kansas City and all of these. You have this desire to do what Jesus did. If you have two coats, give one away, right? If people don't have something, you should reach in and give it. And so I tracked with her on that. Like, I understand that that was a lot of that youthful innocence and zeal. And then it went awry.
Yeah, it did. And it's kind of pointing back to the red letters, or at least some of the red letters. Yeah.
Yes. One of the red letters. You know, or you could take, you know, the Thomas Jefferson approach where he just went through and took out all the really bad toxic parts of the Bible. Because I would contend that there still are some red letters where I would probably cut out as well, even though Jesus said them. But that's another topic.
Well, right. Okay. But I'm going to say this. Okay. So the people who we just want to focus on the red letters, why? We know those are the exact words that Jesus said because he wrote them down himself, right? Oh, wait, no, not that. Okay. We know those are the exact words of Jesus because someone who was there with him was taking dictation as he said each word, right? No, not that either.
It's
because his actual disciples memorized what he had said and then wrote it down right after he died and rose from the dead and ascended to heaven, right? No, not that either. So the fact is, true historic biblical scholars agree that the so-called four gospels, they weren't written down until at least 40 to 70 years after Jesus died.
I have to say that rocked my world when I first learned that.
As it should.
We are going to get into an in-depth episode where we talk about kind of how we learned all that stuff.
Right.
But I think what strikes me is just that juvenile thinking that you mentioned of how we were such young teenagers and how that made perfect sense to us.
It did. It worked back then. So anyway, I could go on and on.
Hey, Brian, do you know anyone that was once a teenage fundamentalist?
Oh, Troy, you know that I was because you and I have a podcast called I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist.
I did know that. But you know what I find myself asking these days?
No, I don't, but I think you're going to tell me.
What about all those things that church gave us definite answers for? What are we supposed to think about all those things now?
Well, funnily enough, that's what we're doing for season 5 of I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist.
Ooh, Brian, I sense the Lord at work here.
He works in mysterious ways. And we are going to unpack these things. We're going to find out what we do think about them now.
So tune in to season 5 of I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist, the official podcast for the Azusa Street Revival.
I'm not quite sure that's true, but it is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, next. Go to the next thing.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, we have to also remember it was the counterculture time, back to that part of the fondness of trying to have all things in common and kind of standing against the whole materialistic generation of our parents, and every generation wants to rebel. And so you have all that going on. But then LDM morphed into a business to churn out literature and albums and you were really with it from the beginning where you watched that change. I think in one of our episodes, you talk about how it was like this evangelical association and then it was like a business.
Yeah, it did become very much like that. And I do want to say one other thing going back to that whole idyllic hippie, we're going to help everybody. You know, there was truth to that, that drew us. But also it was conditional, right? Because there was still an agenda. Because you're not there to help other people just for the sake of genuinely making their lives better. No, you have an ulterior motive. You're there to get people to believe, to convert. And I say this, you know, Christians who are saying we're feeding the homeless because we're doing what Jesus asked us to do. Okay, maybe you are. But if you knew for certain that these homeless people will never, quote, accept Jesus, would you still go out there and spend all that money and all that time to help and feed them? Or would you move on to someone else who's more likely to buy into your belief system?
I think of a scripture, casting your pearls before swine.
How does that apply?
We're actually taught, don't waste your time on those people who are going to yield fruit.
Right. Wow. I'd always thought of that in terms of trying to convince someone with an argument that doesn't want to listen, whose heart is hard. But yeah.
I remember when I was first searching out Jesus, I think I did have a genuine desire to help people. And I would say it was the methodical conditioning and teaching and brainwashing of the fundamentalist message that began to twist that for the agenda that you talk about.
I think you're right.
And you can hear that in Melody's interview. There was definitely the agenda that, you know, was the overarching theme of all of that.
Right. And another theme that you hear her talk about is lots of examples of Keith's lack of boundaries and abusive control, right? She talks about how he got rid of all her books without her permission. Before they get married, they have a huge fight because Keith wants a cross on their wedding rings and she doesn't. But guess what? Keith won. And like Keith telling Melody that she needs to go talk to this person who's crying. And I mean, just so much directive control. And again, it's all kind of glorified in the name of, wow, look at this fiery prophet for God.
It's so glorified, Sharon. And I think when you did your interview with I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist with Troy, I think that probably that was the first time that a lot of people heard of that bully side of Keith. And I don't know how people responded to that, but when you start hearing these stories and hearing Melody share those stories, to me, it really reinforced that whole concept of how he just steamrolled over people and he steamrolled over Melody. And to this day, according to that interview of October 31st, 2023, she doesn't see that as a red flag or a problem.
No, no, she doesn't. Or if she does, she does not publicly admit it because that would hurt the brand. It would hurt the brand. Yeah. So Melody also shares snippets about other things that Keith thought and did. And again, the world is not black and white. And some of this stuff wasn't bad. Some of this stuff was even admirable, right? So his thing about, you know, the gospel should be free. I mean, that totally fits with what Jesus taught, the red letters again, or not, right? And do you remember her talking about him giving a check, giving money to that single mom?
Yes. I mean, I think you reinforced that all the time because you knew him more personally than many of us did, that he was generous.
Yeah, he really was. He was. And then the black and white of not charging for concerts, that really was sincere from his heart. You know, he's like, if this is ministry, you cannot charge and we shouldn't be making a ton of money. And I believe that that was sincere from Keith's heart, and I believe that that was a very good thing.
Yeah, it's what drew a lot of us to that ministry.
Now, did it stay that way? No, maybe not, but it began that way for sure. Now, something that I didn't know or maybe I had no recollection of, and it was just like an, oh my God, for me, was when Melody talks about Last Days Ministries gave YWAM between $200,000 and $300,000 to fill the gas tanks for the mercy ships. So, I mean, when I'm listening to that and I'm going, holy shit, wait, what? And okay, so of course, you know me, I'm always numbers. So in today's dollars, that would be between $640,000 to just under $1 million. News to me.
Yep. So when I saw that, it also reinforced why Keith Green and Last Days was so important to Youth with a Mission.
Oh, yeah. Oh, like, yeah.
This is definitely, they were not going to let this go easily. Now,
no.
I did try to reference Melody's book, No Compromise, because I think she did talk about the Anastasis then, and I could only find the record of giving $28,000. So I don't know if there was money we didn't know about or if in her memory, like the fish, it grew. I don't know. But I do think that Keith was generous, and he was a cash cow for Youth with a Mission, and particularly Lauren Cunningham had his eyes set on Keith Green.
I know, but you know what? For us to have that cash, I mean, whether it's $28,000 or $300,000, of course, that's a big range, but the only reason, we would have had chunks of cash in the bank is because the labor at Last Days, we had people working 6 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day, not getting paid anything or getting a tiny little stipend or pocket change.
And I have to add this little story in because I don't think I've told it before, but we, at the time that all this cash was flowing, and I think you talk about how he bought air-conditioned tractors, we were rationed on certain food items daily, and orange juice and milk was one of those. And so we had to keep a little index card. And if we ever had a half a glass of juice or a glass of milk that was not part of our daily ration, we had to pay for that. We had to record that on an index card and tally that up every month and pay the ministry for the juice and the milk that we were drinking from the hours that we were working, that we were getting paid for.
Oh, and my gosh.
The thing about that is it was such a control mechanism over my life. I had so much guilt every month because I was like, am I stealing from the ministry? Did I have a glass of milk and not record it? So then I would always try to round up and pay more.
And if the and if the whole ministry was kind of existing on a, you know, on a tight budget, that would be one thing.
Correct.
But there's tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars to give away, and there's lots of money for airstrips and lots of money for airplanes. And okay, yeah, I'm going down that road again. So.
Yeah, no, and just, but it's the heart of how you view your people, right? And I know that you say Keith was generous, and I know that there was a time where Melody was at the helm. And I recall a story from you, I don't know if you'll remember it, from you and your ex talking about how Melody particularly really resented that we all felt like we should get unlimited orange juice or milk, that was actually a topic at a leadership meeting.
I remember that. Yeah. Well, you know, whether it was $28,000, like the book says, for the Panama Canal crossing, the fees, which again, that would have been $90,000 in today's money, or whether it was this $200,000 to $300,000 to fill the gas tanks for the Anastasis, which, by the way, did I ever tell you that we actually toured and stayed on the Anastasis in our European trip with Keith and Mel?
I think I actually remember that.
Yeah,
when you guys came back and reported back from that trip.
Yeah, they were at the tail end of the whole refurbishing, but it hadn't sailed yet. So another little side note. But anyway, regardless of how much money it was or what exactly it was used for, I think about the mercy ships and it kind of goes back to that same sort of thing. Yes, they are offering medical help and it is legitimate good work that makes a huge difference in the quality of life for the people in the here and now here on earth. But the real agenda is to convert them to believe what the YWAMers think they should believe. And I know they're separate from YWAM now, but hey, it really is still the same core thing. And, you know, it's like a timeshare visit, you know, we're going to give you this wonderful weekend getaway, not because we care about you, but because we want to sell you something, right?
Oh, that is so true. That is so similar. Oh, wow. Well, and one of the things I realized too, that she never mentioned in this interview. So you have this whole story, looking back, the rose-colored glasses. She never mentions her failed marriage, the divorce that she had, and anything that she learned from that. I thought that was a very interesting edit that didn't make it into her interview.
You know, this Tracy, this is where I've got these feels, these big, big time feels. I mean, I do feel sad for her. I feel sorry for her. We both know the agonizing pain of a broken relationship and a divorce. We both went through it. Not fun. Awful, awful.
Spoiler alert, Sharon, you and I are going to do a deep dive on a series on divorce. So yep, stay tuned for that.
All right. But I am also fucking furious with her at her silence and her hypocrisy, right? She continues to inflict condemnation on Christians who divorce. She encourages people to stay in broken, horrible, unhappy, abusive marriages. She offers no consolation to those who feel they have failed. And why? Why not be honest and transparent? Melody, why won't you talk about going through this divorce? Why won't you talk about it? I'm just like, what are you trying to hide? Do you feel shame? Do you feel fear? Do you feel that you failed? But let's just deny it. Okay. And of course, I'm sure she's talked with people in private, but you are fucking promoting don't get a divorce literature that you're selling, that you're making money off of, that you're telling all these other poor people, and they're struggling, and you just keep your mouth shut about it and pretend that it's all okay. I'm sorry. This pisses me off beyond what words I can come up with.
Yep. I mean, and that is kind of what's pervasive in this sphere that we do find so objectionable. I mean, I've talked about, you know, I think in episode 20, when I talk about being upset with the church, they edit out and refuse to address any of the things that they feel that they have failed at. And one of the things I wondered, you know, when you mentioned, you know, is she ashamed? Is she embarrassed? I'm sure she is. I think back to the anastasis in the story, she talks about this guy who was going to fill the anastasis gas tank up.
Oh yeah, that he promised. He was telling YWAM at the time that he was going to do all this, give this money.
Yes, it actually reminded me of some of the characters that would be around Mike Bickle at the time, because I think he had a big personality and he was really seen by Youth of the Mission as some great kind of, you know, philanthropist. And he was going to give a huge chunk of it also to LDM. And
you just said, wait. You said Mike Bickle?
I said that if you followed the Prophets of Kansas City, Mike Bickle would hang out with Bob Jones, who's not the Bob Jones of the Bob Jones University, but in the telling of this story, they seemed very similar in their sleaziness and boisterousness and not having, you know, the real character behind what they were promising. And Melody freely indicates that she did not see him as a fraud.
But Keith did. Keith saw that the guy was sleazy and didn't believe him when he was promising to give money, right?
Yes, Keith did. And, you know, and that's what, if you follow, you know, not to go down the rabbit hole too much, but the IHOP Kansas City, when you start to look live to some of those things, it's obvious to most people that there's something not right with these people. And so later, and most people don't know this story because Melody has stayed silent on it, she got sadly taken by another con man who would then be her short-lived husband, Andy Seawright. We can say his name, right, Sharon?
We're going to say it. And it wasn't short-lived. It went on for years. But I think it went bad very quickly. Yet at the time, all the announcements about it, she was so sure. God had told her, God, this is the match made in heaven. And all of YWAM leadership affirms, this is God's will. This is God's will.
Bing, 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 bing. And that is part of, I think, why that gets edited out and these types of stories get edited out of other people's testimony, because that cognitive dissonance, they cannot square this with some of the stuff they believed and then the lived experience. And so instead of allowing that to really break you down and have you face it, they just edit it out.
Right. Pretend it never happened. Just pretend it never happened.
Which brings us to, is this only our second bucket?
Holy shit.
Okay. I was sure there was going to be a three in front of that. And this one is the hard one. It's that personal pain and trauma. So Melody talks about how she goes out to California for the Anastasis arrival. And that was previously scheduled to be Keith Green meeting the Anastasis, of which he made a generous donation. And all the YWAM leaders are there. And she talks about her deep relationship. I think this probably meant a lot to her since it happened so quickly within weeks of the plane crash.
I mean, the human compassion for her loss and suffering, I'm sure she got support and shoulders to cry on and arms to hold her. And that is so important. I mean, we need to be connected when we are in times of great grief. And at the same time,
and
YWAM was absolutely coveting and I think manipulating for their own benefit, building their own kingdom, right? So it's very interesting timing when the question comes up in that whole swirl of, you know, fear and trauma that we're all going through is like, okay, who should lead Last Days? And I'm just started wondering about the timeline. So was this right after her visit to California Mercy Ships? And did the YWAM leadership start stoking it then and there?
Yes.
And so there's another aspect of dealing with this, the pain and the trauma. All right. So Keith was a bully. He was overbearing. And Melody was absolutely under his control. I mean, you have the belief system of the wife submitting and all that. But I mean, Keith was on steroids, you know, male dominance. And it makes total sense to me that she wouldn't want to ever be under that again. I mean, you and I, Tracy, our marriages, husbands, our first husbands were different than Keith. Mine had some same strong, intolerant type of personality and behavior. But both of us are like, we got out from under that. We stepped away from our belief system, but there ain't no way in hell we're going back under the control of another human being. Just not going to do it again. So I get that for her. I get that she would not ever want to be under that kind of control. And my now ex-husband, at the time, many people looked to him as being the natural next leader for Last Days, but he had some very similar personality traits, you know, the black and white, the harsh, the judgmental. So I have this sense that her need to be the leader and get control was more about not wanting to be abused anymore than that it was some sense of calling or aptitude for actual leadership of this organization.
Oh, yeah. And as we're talking about this just now, and to think about the most vulnerable time in her life and everything that we've learned about grooming and exploitation, of which we now also know that Youth with a Mission was masterful at that. Lauren Cunningham was masterful at that. They absolutely pounced on her vulnerability here.
Yeah, they did.
And I think you're exactly right. And I think they also were aware of some of Keith's foibles and were able to really swoop in. And I never really put that together about this visit to California just 2 weeks after,
after
the plane crash.
Yeah, that was new insight for me listening to this interview.
and how absolutely that's the classic sign of a manipulator, is to exploit that vulnerability. And yeah. as we'll go on, you know, she suffered tremendously for that choice. And of course, those under her, we suffered as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Tracy, the things that happened after that, they really do fall in the category of this pain and trauma. But instead of addressing that and working through it in a healthy way, it becomes this pivot point to double down on Keith's message and the sold out for Jesus and Jesus only, Jesus always. So I think that's the unhealthy, well, there's so much that's unhealthy, but
yes,
that was the coping mechanism she used rather than some self-reflection and honesty. And I get it. You and I, we did the same thing, but yes. I think this is where, you know, we can really look at how that happened for her, right?
Yes. And, you know, it's that point of vulnerability. I mean, we talk about you and I having our childhood trauma, that was our, you know, entryway into, mm-hmm. you know, to that message. And then, of course, Youth with the Missions is not quite as controlling of an aspect as Keith was, and just mm-hmm. boistering her up to be this godly leader. And she does double down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I heard the whole interview, I thought one of what I would call an insight, right, that just seemed to jump out at me, is she had talked about when Keith was trying to lead her to Jesus and how she really wrestled with betraying her own Judaism because she was raised mm-hmm. Jewish, and how that was such an important aspect of her identity and it was a real struggle. And I thought about where she's landed now. It just struck me. I think in all of this, when she decided to double down, for her to have those cracks that we all have, to really face those and address those, I think she's going to wrestle with that sense of betraying Keith.
Oh, wow.
Because he is known as this icon of evangelicalism, and also betraying Jesus, that
right.
she would not be able to face those things for fear that she would be disloyal.
Yeah.
And I got it. I was like, I understood that internal turmoil and wrestling. Yeah.
Something just occurred to me with what you're saying. I have a very close friend who had a parent die when they were in their early teens. And that would be a very traumatic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as time has gone on, this person has been able to look back, and with the help of a therapist also, but things that happened in that family, both before the parent died and after the parent died with the remaining parent, were really, really emotionally abusive. I mean, horrible. And it's been really hard for my friend to be able to look at and say, yes, my parent did me harm, because that parent is dead. And it feels disloyal. Mm-hmm. It feels like...
Yes.
I'm a bad person if I, what, you don't speak ill of the dead. And it never occurred to me, but there may be that aspect, kind of like, oh my God, you know, chains reaching out from Keith's grave that Melody is still entangled in and can't get free of because he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's dead, and reinforced by the Youth with the Mission leaders, who basically says, right. this is now your purpose. This is the purpose out of all of that.
Right.
So how do you face that, Sharon? How do you
That's tough.
How do you basically let that all fall away? That's tough.
It's very, very,
very,
very,
very tough.
Very tough. One of the things she was talking about in the interview was about feeling afraid for her kids to go on the plane. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, she said it in a way that was different than what she said in the book all those years ago. What do you think on that?
I think that's exactly right. That also was something I noticed. And we talked earlier about that cognitive dissonance, that you'll hear her say something that I think is a reflection of really what's happening. And then she will double down to mm-hmm. kind of give that reason of why it's Jesus. And I think there may have been something in her that was similar to what you share in our episode 14 of the plane crash. I mean, you just lay it out as far as many people didn't trust him in the plane. They didn't want him, you know, near the pilot seat, that they understood there was a recklessness about him. And deep down, that was something maybe that was resonating in her of like, I don't know that I want my kids to go on a plane with Keith, which would be very, very, very hard to live with. But I think she was trained and has been trained to push that voice down and say, you know, no, I'm being silly and all the stuff that we also learned. And I noticed that also in her No Compromise book, when she talks about Keith playing the song for her for the first time, the song to Josiah. And listeners, if you don't know that, we'll put a link to that. I know that I've listened to that recently, and it's a terrible song. It's a terrible song for your child to basically be hated by the world and beaten up and persecuted and martyred for Jesus, basically.
And yet we're gonna cheer that because that is the ultimate, isn't it?
So cheer that. And so I think she definitely kind of shares. She was a little bit horrified by that song, as a mother's heart would be. And immediately she pushed that down. I'm not spiritual enough. The spiritual, you know, feelings would be. So I see Melody giving us glimpses of those cracks and how she's filling them in kind of as fast as they can happen with the brainwashing, ultimately.
You know, in the book, I went back because something she said in the interview, I was like, is that what I remember reading in the book? So in the book, she seems to indicate that Keith is the one who brought it all up, you know, before they go out to the plane, who says, if I don't come back, whatever, raise the kids to be godly women or something like that. But in this interview, this last October interview, she says that she asked it. And kind of hinting like, okay, there's a significant premonition or she's suspicious. Again, I went back to transcript of the interview. I went back and found the section in No Compromise. And yeah, they don't really jive. And why? I mean, who said what? We can speculate. And there's also the part of me that's like, why does it matter? It doesn't matter. I mean, the difference between what she says in the book and what she says now, all of us, you know, including you and me, Tracy, I mean, our memories shift. They're never totally accurate. Also, they can often morph because of the story that we want to tell ourselves. What we want to believe is true and what will help us to cope or to feel better about ourselves or better about our belief systems, right?
Yes. And I hear throughout this interview where I had talked about that cognitive dissonance being so palpable, I hear her vacillating in that throughout the interview. This is so terrible. It's so painful, but God had a purpose, right? I see her doing that back and forth. And, you know, our hope is at some point she will give herself permission, go to counseling and get permission. Because I think as those cracks really start to allow to form, I think she would find some more freedom than she has currently.
I know she would. I know she would. I wish that for her. I hope that for her. Oh, you know, she talked about, she mentions, you know, the giant raindrops and the sense of God's presence and God crying. And as you've said before, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, that's something that Paul talks about in our episode of the plane crash on his memories. I mean, we were all noticing that and we were looking for signs, and it makes sense that in one of our moments of the deepest grief, we're looking for comfort, right?
Yeah, you do. You do. And she also said what so many Christians say in the face of tragedy, God is in control. All our days are counted. The hair on your head is numbered. But here's the cognitive dissonance. I mean, you can't heal, right? Because if God's in control, then this is what he wanted. He wanted this or he didn't want this. I mean, which is it? It's just, it leaves you, it's a crazy maker.
It is. And I think with her older, wiser self, I can hear that battle more than I've heard in other interviews. I will just say that.
Yes.
And I get it because, you know, we've heard all kinds of crazy things that the Christian community has said, why God had to take Keith Green. And if you're the one that lost your children and your husband, those are shit answers. They're just shit answers.
They are.
And it's like, so then you have to go like, okay, but why?
Right. Yeah.
And I think, you know, in the end, because she was thrust at the helm of things, I think, which was really bad for her, you know, the age-old hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
We have had a lot of grace and understanding for that, but there was a whole ministry that ended up bearing a lot of that hurt that wasn't healed in her.
Yeah. She says in the interview, she talks about having been mad for a very long time, mm-hmm. right? But I don't think she said who she was mad at, right? And she used the words, my life was ruined. I was yes. stunned to hear her say that. My life was ruined.
Yes. And, you know, that's what we're saying, listeners. We've heard kind of some explanations of that time in this interview that we've never heard before. And of course, we were living with her during this time. Mm-hmm. And so we could see her struggling. We could see the pain. I mean, if I had a chart to write out, I would say she is angry.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, again, it's like she's not allowed to be angry. She's got to get up on that stage, you know, and I know that Sharon, you're the first one to say she also wanted that, but I think we can understand that, you know, she was also groomed. She was yeah. groomed that this gave her purpose to kind of handle all of that. And when she wasn't on that stage and when she wasn't being buoyed up by the leadership, she was an angry woman who was really struggling to find healing and took it out on a lot of us.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to stay on that thing of anger just a little bit. She said it took her 3 years to stop crying every single day.
Every day.
And that is grief, right? That's incredible mm-hmm. grief. But the problem is, so she's got this anger, and in the belief system, you have no right to be angry. God's in control, right? God will do his will.
Correct.
So you can't be angry at God. And Keith is dead, so you sort of can't be angry at him, although she has admitted being angry at Keith. But ultimately, you can't be angry because God has allowed this for his higher purpose and glory. And that's what's so fucked up about it, is it doesn't let her experience the reality of her grief and her anger in the way she should. The fact is, her husband did a fucking stupid thing and killed himself and their two children. Keith did that. But she just can't have the full human experience because she's got to wrap it all up in this I love Jesus stuff and I want to yeah. obey Jesus. And that's where my heart breaks for her. That's where my heart just hurts for what she's gone through.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there were some of us watching on, you know, and in the environment that we're in, you can see this as people are talking about the IHOP KC environment as well, that you can't talk, right? The silent environment, because mm-hmm. you would be accused of gossiping. So you have to hold these things and not share them because your heart is wrong. But later on, I think as many of us then have been able to share what we felt in the past, is she should have stepped down. It's like, mm-hmm. and that's where I personally have anger at Youth with a Mission and the leaders, because at the time I'm like, oh, you know, they're all just believing what they believe. Like, I am absolutely convinced that they knew what they were doing. And I am angry. I'm angry that they exploited this woman. They exploited her grief. They exploited her children, right? You're making these children go on tour to retell this story over and over again. That's where this whole Christendom begins to, you've got to save the institution at the mm-hmm. price of the people.
Mm. In the interview, she also talks about the glorious, glorious effort for missions, right? The 2-year campaign that got 200,000 people into the mission field.
But do you notice who she does not mention when she talks about that?
Oh, who might that be?
Huh. Staggering. I mean, I had to rewind it to make sure I hadn't missed it.
Yeah. So what we're talking about, folks, is she doesn't mention YWAM, Youth with a Mission. She doesn't mention that at all in this whole thing about the push for missions. I'm like, I don't know. Did they edit it out? Did the podcaster edit it out? Or did she not say it? And, you know, there were other things she used to gush about that she doesn't anymore, right?
Yep. She used to gush about IHOP KC. Mm-hmm. She used to gush about Teen Mania, which is still on her website, and she needs to be told to take that down because I think they're so wrought with scandal, she shouldn't have that up. But I guess there was a little part of me that was a crack of hope. It's like, has she seen some of the toxicity that comes from those organizations and has edited that? I don't know.
Right. Well, not based on what she was saying publicly in July of 2022 at the plane crash anniversary. But remember, that was like a little over a year from that time to this interview. So maybe there are some little cracks happening. Maybe there are. That would be really wonderful.
That would be great. Yeah. And, you know, what I thought was interesting too is I think she, in hindsight now, realizes the community that she had at Last Days Ministries, and I think kind of created a little bit at IHOP Kansas City as well. You know, she was a single mom through that, and all of the extra help that she had. I mean, we now would look back at that as definitely exploiting the labor that was there and mistreatment.
that wasn't community friend help. That was indentured servitude. the poor girls that had to go down there and be her housekeeper and her nanny and her babysitter. I'm sorry.
But
that
did
just...
you hear how she painted it though?
As if all these people, it was like your next door neighbors coming to you with a covered dish to help you grieve, and like, yes. No. They were indentured servants that were barely getting paid, and they were told this is what they had to do. I mean, that's really what happened. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and mistreated along the way, right? Yes. Mistreated and resented along the way, which again, we say this over and over again, we get the grief, but there's no excuse for that.
No.
And that's why I say when she looks back, it's always, and I guess grief and certain types of our memory does this to us, she's edited out the discord and the pain. And I know people who actually shared with her how it was and just talked about how, you know, she does recognize that she probably could have never made it through that time without that community. But she definitely paints it as, hey, we all just need that, you know, that community that can reach out and help us during these times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She also talks about how, and this is part of the thing about you, we should be there as humans for one another, to help one another, to offer support, to be practical, to stay in their lives. And it takes years, not months. And she's saying you need to walk with people who experience trauma. And that is true. She also says about Christians, you know, they think that if they pray hard enough, it'll all be okay.
Wow.
But more people don't get healed than get healed. And you can fast and pray, but the person still dies. And then we think that God let us down. We're trying to manipulate God. And that, Tracy, was like, I don't know, like, which way is she coming from? Because it was just really weird, right?
Exactly.
Again, it's that cognitive dissonance, because this idea that by praying, we're trying to manipulate God. Well, wait a second.
Right.
Don't you say that your Bible tells you to ask God for things? And yes, it's like a weird reversing of the victim and offender. And I think it's more accurate that prayer manipulates us. Prayer manipulates people. And you ask for whatever it is, the healing or whatever. And when it doesn't happen, then we have to question ourselves. Did we ask for the wrong thing? Did we not ask in the right way? Are we not pure enough? Is God petty? I mean, why does God withhold from us when we're faithful with no explanation?
With no explanation.
You know, you got that scripture. If you have faith like a mustard seed, you shall say to this mountain, be cast into the sea, and it shall be done. So when it doesn't happen, the logical explanation is that your faith is so pathetic, it wasn't even as big as a fucking little mustard seed.
Oh, man.
And for our non-religious listeners, So, you know, that's a scripture reference. And a mustard seed is about 1 millimeter in diameter. So it's the same size as a poppy seed on your morning bagel. Yeah, pretty tiny, pretty tiny.
Yeah, it is pretty tiny. And many of us have had to look it up to be able to put that. I'm like, God, after 25 years, do I still not have faith as big as a mustard seed? It's like, when is this going to happen? But this was so telling. So I personally, and I grant it, listeners, maybe reading into this more than is there, but this to me seemed almost like a direct chastisement of International House of Prayer Kansas City, because this is so much of what they preach and teach. And it's almost like she's now come to the point in her life of, hey, all of that was basically a load of crock, but she doesn't know really what to do with that.
She can't call bullshit. Yeah, she can't say it's bullshit.
She can't. So then she kind of tries to weave it, and then again, then goes back to the double downing. But it did give me a little bit of hope of like, yeah, Melanie, it's not like what half of your, well, not even half, all of your Last Days magazine newsletters preached. It's like, it doesn't work that way. And I know there's a part of you that sees that. And you just got to let the cracks keep coming.
Yeah. Let them come. That other thing about the whole unanswered prayer thing is it's like you're in a super abusive relationship. I mean, imagine if a spouse required you to beg and beg and left hanging, like maybe they will, maybe they won't, despite how desperate your heart is. I mean, we would say that's one sick motherfucker and you got to get out of that relationship, right?
Yes, we would now, but Sharon, we were so conditioned to it.
Oh my God, we were.
One of our dear listeners in our Facebook community recently shared, you know, that post that originated from the Naked Pastor. His comics are so great, by the way.
We'll put a link for him too.
Yes, we will. So it's a drawing of a father sitting in an armchair and his young child standing next to him looking up. And the title above it says, "How a Child Should Not Talk to His Father." So I think you're expecting, you know, curse words or some disrespect coming out. But it's this little child saying, "Dear Father, I'm unworthy to be called your child. Let me be a servant to do your will. Use me as your instrument. Take my mind, take my heart, take my body, take my life. I'm nothing. So consume me for your purpose and for your glory, even though I'm the worst person in the world."
That's the truth. That's the truth of what we believed and how we prayed and how we behaved. And it's so sad. It's so sad.
And we would often rock. If you notice now, if you watch it where they're doing some real, you know, clips from real churches, you'll see people rocking as they kind of repeat those words, which I think definitely has some mental health stuff going on.
Yeah. At the same time, she was chastising, talking about Christians who cast their faith aside when God doesn't answer their prayer. We need to know God does his will. He is in control. And Tracy, we're right back to that whole cognitive dissonance. What the fuck does that even mean? Was it or was it not God's will to kill Josiah and Bethany in a fiery plane crash? If the answer is no, then your God is not all powerful. If that answer is yes, then holy shit. I get that it gives you some weird level of comfort to say, God is in control, God is in control, God is in control, because it's terrifying sometimes to think otherwise. But
yeah,
it just don't work anymore. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, that was what was so interesting about this interview. And again, she almost is using what we would call deconstructed language, right? She's like painting the story about how Christians should and shouldn't be. And then she doubles down, right? She doubles right back down there. So she's verbalizing her trauma. And then she's not quite there, though. She doesn't quite let the cracks work for her. But at one point, she even references all of what she's gone through. And I don't know that she meant to say it this way, but she says, "Jesus doesn't really heal this." And I don't know if she was trying to say, "I have to wait to heaven," because I think that's a certain understanding that some people have. but that jumped out at me too. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, that to me is one of the foundational promises of even staying in this. And at this point, I think she's recognizing this is still a big, large part of her heart that just is not healed.
Right. So do you think that her omitting any references to YWAM and IHOPKC, is she now starting to minimize or move away from the quick miracle fixes that they preach, you think?
I think she is.
That would be good. That would be good.
And I don't know, you know, the circles that she travels in now, but I think even, you know, maybe getting into some of the messianic Christian kind of truth, which I say is maybe a little more conservative than some of the YWAM IHOPKC doctrine, that she might be coming back to some more of those roots. Personally, I have nothing to base that on, listeners. Right. So okay. It's just
your hope. Okay. Well, you know, if we kind of start wrapping this up, I guess what I feel, Tracy, when I listened to that interview and I went back and read a transcript of it as well, it just strikes me that despite some of the language and despite some of the upbeat inflections, I think Melody is pretty lonely. I really think she is. And I also think of her overall life. You know, I mean, we're going on over 40 years since Keith died, and it's going to come up on 50 years since she and Keith started out on this, you know, we got saved thing.
Oh my God.
Because it was in what, 1975. So yeah, it's almost 50 years.
Oh my God, Sharon, that sounds so crazy.
I know. I think of that overall storyline, that overall, you know, the arc of your life. And I'm like, wow, Melody, is this all you've got? Is this still all you've got? And I feel so sorry for her. And I get that it would be so scary to think of shifting, to think of questioning, to think of being out, right? Because one way or another, there's still kind of this tribe, you know, that she's in. The long-term support and starting over is so very, very hard. And being alone is terrifying. Tracy, I want to say something from my heart, and I know it may sound totally corny, but you're just going to have to bear with me here. Mel, you would not be alone. There are so many people who have hearts that are full of compassion for you, of real love, who know what real love is when it's not wrapped and cloaked in a belief system that says you have to. People who would love to see you find a deeper healing and who would love to see you be, I don't know, your true authentic self, Mel. I mean, not just the recycled widow of long dead music ego Keith Green. And I mean, we have been where you are. We haven't suffered all the things you've suffered and the way you've suffered them, but we've gone through shit too. And we've done things in the name of Christianity for which we are ashamed. And we've hurt people. We've hurt people in pursuit of this misguided quest for holiness. Yeah, I mean, we've wrestled with all those things. And I can tell you that we have found a love and a peace and a joy and a healing beyond what we ever dreamed possible. You're right, Jesus doesn't heal this. But when we find our true selves, we heal ourselves. And we're here for you. I mean, we would sit with you, cry with you. I'll get on a plane and fly out to California and walk with you and love with you. And that's my heart to you, Melody. And I hope you can hear it.